We're in Shmuel Bet. We are learning the eighth parak. this is our third week. We're going to be finishing it up. We're on page 254. We're on Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13. We did a few sentences, a few psukim last week, due to the shortness of time. And just to recap what this parak and the previous one was discussing, Parak Zion talked about, as you may recall, that David wished to build the Beis Hamikdash. And unfortunately, Natan, the prophet, told him the bad news that was not going to happen. And therefore, this parak discusses how David just goes on, if I can use the word, a rampage, just fighting war after war. But the reason why he did it was to pave the road, so to speak, for his son, Shlomo, ultimately, who would be building the Beis Hamikdash and to be able to live in a more peaceful time. And with that said, let's continue with Pasuk Yud Gimel. So all those Pasukim up on page 254. Page 254, Pasuk Yud Gimel. Okay? Alright. Okay. So, the parak continues and says, Vayas David shame, that David made a name for himself, Beshuvo Mehakoso Es Aram, that when he went back from having fought and killing Aram, Begay Melech, which is the name of a place, Shmona Asar Olaf, 18,000. And I believe on our last map, if I recall, which is map 6, there's only three maps here, this is map 6, this is according to the book, and the conquest of Edom, you can see the valley of Salt, or Gei Melech, where the Bnei Israel went and fought against their enemies. Now, what exactly does this mean when the Pasuk tells us that David created a name for himself? Well, of course, he was a man who was just killing people. Of course, you can create a name for yourself in that way. But Rashi has a different spin on this, saying that it was actually something which was a more positive way that he was created a name. Rashi says, Vayas David Shem, the very top Rashi on page 254, Shekavar es haharugin shaharug be'edom, that the people that he killed, people in his army that that killed their enemies, he buried them. He allowed their remains to be buried. But who shame tov Yisrael shekovrim es oyveihem, that people saw that, even though of course it's not good to die, but at least he showed the respect to his enemies that he allowed them to be to receive a proper burial. And as we see in the English, this is basically what it says right on the bottom on the same page on 254, the respect even of his enemies, because he showed respect for his enemies by arranging for their dead to be buried, which is Rashi, which we saw in the next paragraph in English, which says Aram Begay Melech, which is the Valley of Salt, which is located in Edom, which, as our map shows, is in fact the case. Okay, let's move on to the next Pasuk Yudalit. So you see that he attacked Aram. Now the Pasuk Yudalit says, Vayosem Edom Netzivim B'chol Edom. Now, it doesn't say that he fought against Edom, but for some reason, apparently he must have, because it says that he appointed authorities to watch over the people in Edom, B'chol Edom, some Netzivim, throughout this entire area he had these authorities of his that were watching. But he called Edom Avadim L'David, and everyone in Edom became servants to David. V'yosha Hashem es David b'chol asher holach, and Hashem was the one that was with David and caused David to be successful in whichever way he went. David never thought for a moment that it was his own success, his own strength that caused him to win. It wasn't his own strength, but rather Hashem Uzi. It was Hashem's strength.
Why is it repeated? It's that? Why is it
the same thing?
You just repeated. What? Yes. Yeah. There's probably a reason. I'm not sure if we'll probably figure it out. what does it say? Go ahead. Could you read that?
The district appoints authorities to collect taxes at Russia. Diverse receipts indicate that he appointed authorities repeatedly, year after year, maintaining total and uninterrupted control over Edom.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Now, if we look in the Radak continues and discusses this idea of Edom versus Aram. Now, we did mention that Gemelach, which we said, is located in Edom. So what exactly did he fight? He fought against Aram, or did he fight against Edom? The pasuk before said that he smote Aram. And then afterwards it speaks about Edom, how he taxed them, etc. So we look in the words of the Radak, which is underlined over here, which is the very lengthy Radak, we're only going to see part of it, where it says the Medrash of the Medrash Tanchuma, that it says the Omar, the reason for this connection between Edom and Aram, Kishahalach Yoav lehilachem im Aram, that Yoav, who was the military genius of David, he was about to fight against Aram, and in order to do that, he had to go through other locations, other people's property. Amdu alav b'nei Edom. So the people of Edom wished to stop them. Amru lo, and they said, Lo kach amru. Is it not said in your Torah, al tisgaru bam, that you're not allowed to antagonize our Edom, which means you're not allowed to fight up against us. So you have no right to go through our land to attack Aram. So on this, Hashivam Yoav, the Radak continuing to quote, that Yoav responded, V'lokach amar hakasa, but the pasuk also says, Atem obim b'gvulacheichem. It doesn't say that we're not allowed to cross through your land. We're not interested in fighting you. We don't want to kill you. Our whole real motivation is to attack Aram, not you. And we're not starting up against you. We're not antagonizing. We just need to get through your property to get to where we want to go. Anichos alavar v'lo ratzu. So he was hoping that they would leave the Jewish people alone so that they'd be able to go through, but unfortunately, they were unwilling to do so. So since they were not allowing, they were starting to rebel against us, therefore, it was understood by Yoav that it was necessary not only at this point to only fight Aram, but also to attack Edom as well. And that's what the Radak continues and says, two more lines. Omer Yoav, im nachrib Edom achshav. He didn't know what to do. Should he attack Edom, or should he do as he was initially doing, wishing just to cut through Edom and then to attack Aram? So Radak says, im nachrib Edom achshav, that if I attack Edom now, because they're being pretty brazen and chutzpah to me, not allowing us to go through their land, ain odomotzin b'chazoroseinu, then it's going to be difficult for us when we return. We're not going to have the proper provisions. El Naniachosam, we're going to forget about them for a minute. Achinaka es Aram, we're going to first attack Aram. V'nachzor lehem, and then we're going to come back afterwards and attack them. Okach nemar v'yoshev Yoav v'yach es Edom. So therefore, this is what was happening over here. We don't have to see the rest of this Radak, but that Aram was his initial purpose of attacking. Edom stopped them, so he decided to fight Aram, and then on his way back to attack Edom. Okay, very lovely. All right, let's move on. Move on to the next Pasuk Tesvav. Okay. So I told you this is going to be a gory pair. Pasuk Tesvav tells us, Vayimloch David al kol Yisrael. So David, as we know, he now was the king of all Klal Yisrael. He wasn't split. But David osem mishpat u'sadaka l'chol amo. So David did mishpat, translated here as justice. Thank you. And tzedakah, and charity, and kindness. So he did both. He did mishpat and tzedakah l'chol amo, to his entire nation. And on this, I underlined it because it seems to be that both of those words are mutually exclusive. It's not possible to have mishpat, because mishpat means letter of the law, absolute justice. Tzedakah means flexible, kind, all right, overlooking certain things. How is it possible that David did Mishpat as well as Tzedakah? So that's the question that some of the Mefarshim deal with. Let's start off looking at the words of the Radak over here on the second to last line on our page. Mishpat u'Tzedakah, skipping a few words. V'zehu kolomer ha'ya shovid b'emes b'mishpatei hariv asher bein ish l'ish. He used to be exact in his justice and judgment between various quarrels between one person and the next. Gam ha'ya asa imam tzedakah. But he also did with them charity kamo shahoyu srichen olav, in the event that they were in need of it. Now, what exactly does this mean? So, it's brought down in a little bit more detail. Actually, a Gemara in Sanhedrin discusses this, that even though Mishpat and Tzedakah seem to be the opposites, so what he actually did was that, let's say, for example, there was a dispute between Reuven and Shimon over $100. One person says, you owe me $100, and says, no, you don't. Turns out, David has to do Mishpat, and the justice, the judgment is, you owe this person $100. Now, unfortunately, the person that owes the $100 doesn't have it. Now, David will go into his own pocket and to give the money that this person owes. And that was the way that David, on one hand, did Mishpat, but he also did Tzedakah. That's also the explanation of the order. Mishpat u'Tzedakah. The sensitivity that David certainly would not deviate from the proper psak, halacha, but nonetheless, this is what he did. And the Mefarshim, of course, deal with the question that is it possible that maybe people would take advantage of David for this situation? But and why exactly the whole purpose of the Mishpat really at all, if after all, he's going to end up paying for everything anyway? But this is how David operated. David wanted to make sure that everything was done properly, and then in the event that a person was in the need of some assistance, that he would be there to help. That was the greatness of David, that he was sensitive. The interesting part of why this is also brought down is this is brought down in the parak which discusses bloodshed, war, violence. Nonetheless, we also see David knew how to turn and turn off that switch. He was someone that knew how to be compassionate and kind when the time called for it. And therefore, this is the idea of this pasuk.
Rabbi, on the other page in the English, it says that he was able to do this because he could show he had wisdom and integrity, which enabled him to do so. I mean, you have to get, I guess, have certain insights into what you're dealing with to know if it's a case that's a truism.
Right, that's true. Right.
I have a question. When it says that he went into his own pocket and he took out money, was that money that was his? Or was it money that was collected as taxes?
Taxes. Like nowadays, right? Like the guy who came before the court and pleaded on plea for mercy, and he's going to give so much charity. They said, yeah, but it wasn't for money.
I would imagine it was his. That's what I would like to believe. Otherwise,
why? There's a great lesson to be learned by collecting money and also having you have social security. Yeah. You have all these things to help the poor. As a nation, you have the need to help the poor, and he's facing the judgment that this person needs help, and help from the government, or from the king. But why did he all of a sudden get so much money if it wasn't from the booty and
the spoil of the war?
The spoils of war.
That's the government.
And he also, as we saw, one of the reasons also for this connection is that if he could not build a base of Mikdash, in addition to getting rid of all the enemies for his son, but also to have all the raw materials for the base of Mikdash, all the gold, silver, all the precious metals. So he designated all those things, whether it's going to be used is going to be a question, but nonetheless he designated all these things so his son would be able to build.
So his government has tzedek and tzedakah and chesed.
Mishpat
and chesed.
It's part. No, that it's possible you could read it that way.
Which sounds a lot better than that he's giving it from Zohar.
I mean, the way it's brought down, at least according to this explanation, which doesn't mean it has to be read this way, is, I'll just read this one sentence, Mishpat lezeh she'echser lo'as mamono. So the Mishpat was that this person was owed the money, so he decided that this person was supposed to be paid. Usadaka, what was the sadaka? Was that Shishilim lo mitoch beito? It says that he took it from his own house. That's what it says. And a critical reading, perhaps, of this pasuk is by he David osa mishpat usadaka l'chalamo, which maybe means David himself personally. Or as you're saying, it could be that David was the leader who took. That's possible. It certainly could read it that way as well.
Where would he get the money? He's running away. He's not working. He's running.
He's not working.
He gets stipend. He has a salary of some sort.
Right.
Right.
So.
Does he have many wives?
That's a lot of money.
All right. Let's move on. Let's see the next pasuk. So pasuk Tet Zayin. V'yoav ben Sruya al Hasava. So we've already been introduced numerous times, but certainly in the Radak we saw that Yoav ben Sruya was al Hasava. He was the person who was in charge of the army. V'yoshafat ben Achilud Mazkir. Mazkir is translated here as the chronicler, which means that he used to write. They wrote things down, right? That's how it's translated in Rashi over here. Mazkir Ezadin Balafan of Rishon Lepasku Rishon. So he was the one that wrote down all this critical information. Now the question is, why do we mention Yoav ben Sruya? What is this connection? So we're seeing that this is his whole cabinet, all the people that he turned to in the times of need. One of the people that he turned to is Yoav ben Sruya, al-Hasava. The question is, why do we mention Yoav ben Sruya juxtaposed right next to David? So the Mefarshim learned from this a novel idea, which could perhaps answer a question about the Israeli army. It's brought down, I don't have this in front of you, but the Gemara does tell us in Sanhedrin, I'd like to share with you this quick, short paragraph, the connection between the two psukim that we read about David being a judge, and then immediately afterwards about Yoav ben Sruya, who was in charge of the army. So on this, the Talmud says, quote, Amar Rav Abba Bar Kahana, Ilmoli David, Shahi Osik B'Torah, Lo Asa Yoav Milcham, Ilmoli Yoav Ben, Lo Asa David B'Torah, then if it wasn't for David involved in his Torah study, in his involvement in what he was doing, then Yoav would not have been successful in war. If it was not for Yoav being successful in war, then David would not have been able to learn Torah, which sounds like it's a
seesaw.
It's a seesaw. It's a...
relationship that has to exist. You can't have one without the other.
That's right. That's right. So it's only a partnership.
Scale.
Yeah. What's that? Yeah. A seesaw. All right. Same idea. Yeah. So each one complemented one another. And based on this, just one more line. It says, "Mashmaos Dibri Chazal Sheyoav VeDavid Hashlimu Ze Et Ze." They completed each other. The Schus HaTorah Shel David. So even though you have the guns shooting and the tanks rolling the ground and all the various aircraft up in the sky, it's also those who are studying in the yeshiva that give the schut that Hashem will assist us to be successful in the milchama. And of course, this is a question, and this is certainly a very sensitive issue when it comes to Israel and learning as opposed to fighting, or in addition to.
Has there to you to a little
bit? Right, right. So.
Then you get the pretty balance.
Right. So this is another method. You can certainly do both. You can do one. Obviously, there should be a mutual respect comparable to the respect that David had for Yoav. David, who learned Torah, still did not mock Yoav, who was the one who was in the field. Dove, of course, also was a soldier, but Yoav was the mastermind, and he certainly respected the soldiers that gave their lives. So even though you're studying Torah like David, in order for it to be this equal connection with one another, you have to have mutual respect for one another. And of course, it works the other way around. Those who are fighting in the battlefield also need to acknowledge and respect those who are studying Torah. Has to be a mutually respected relationship, which unfortunately may not be in all situations, certainly this day.
What does Rashi have
done for him? So the Maskir we just mentioned was the translation of what this was. This person was a scribe, right? Maskir, he recalled Ezed Din Balafan of Rishon, whatever laws came before, right? If there was a precedent set before in court, that he would know exactly what to do, and he wrote everything down. Right, so he knew all these different laws, and he wrote everything down. So he was someone who wrote down all the court cases, so that he would be in files and be able to be pulled up. They would go to the law library and just pick up all these materials. Okay, so that's how the Mefarshim again connect and Yoav to David, the important balance between the two. But Sadok ben Achituv v'Achi Melech ben Yosar Kohanim Usroya Sofer. So you have these other people that were directly involved with David. Yahu ben Yehoyada v'Akresi v'Aplesi uvnei David Kohanim Hoyu. So it mentions Ben Yahu ben Yehoyada. Do you have that page, 256? Oh, so the last pasuk in this parak is Ben Yahu ben Yehoyada, the crazy about Placey. What exactly is crazy in Placey? So it's translated over here as that he was in charge of the archers and the slingers, which means that it sounds like Ben Yahu ben Yehoyada was someone who was a warrior of some sort, and that's what it means, crazy about Placey. But the truth is, Rashi, as well as the other Mefarshim, say that Kresi Uplesi has nothing to do whatsoever to warfare. But Rashi says, Rabosenu Amru, Kresi Uplesi Urim Betumim. This is referring to the Urim Betumim, which of course was also instrumental in the Mechama and the war, because they used to ask Hashem whether or not they should fight, whether it be successful. This is also echoed in the words of the Radak, Rizal Perishuhu, Elu Urim Betumim. And if you look on the bottom, this is actually Gemara in Brachot. The Gemara in Brachot tells us the reason why the Urim Betumim is called Kresi Uplesi. So if you look on the bottom right, it says according to the Talmud, the title Kresi Uplesi. I'm on the English on the bottom right corner on page 256. According to the Talmud, the title Kresi Uplesi refers to something that renders precise and clear-cut decisions. So crazy kares means it's cuts, very clear cuts, and placey and it means distinguished from the word mufla or distinguished or special. And if you continue, then it says crazy and placey are either the Urim Betumim or the Sanhedrin, both give clear cut decisions and are distinguished. Accordingly, this person Ben Yahu ben Yehoyada was the one who helped decide which questions should be presented to the Urim Betumim and how they should be phrased, or he was the head of the Sanhedrin. So either way you slice it, this is who he was. Again, it's just mentioning all the different people that David turned to make his stay as the king successful. The last part of this parak, which is difficult, is the last words of the parak that says, "Uvnei David Kohanim Hayu."
He says in English, like they could not have been Kohanim, actually, because he was from the tribe of Judah.
Right, so...
So the Kohan, there's a whole English there. You know?
Correct.
But everybody can use themselves, because you're not translating Kohanim as what we right. take it for, you're taking it...
Correct.
That's so smart. It's all the English.
But we're doing it from the Tanakh. Where did the Tanakh
get it from?
You get it from Elohim, could be Sarim, it could be...
Hashem,
and Hashem, but Elohim is not necessarily Hashem.
Right, but
it's with your
Except for now that we're learning a whole different.
Where do you get? No. You can't just say.
I don't know. I'm not that learned.
They can't just say that.
But it says, according to this, I think it's Tom in the Dark.
Yes, it's excellent.
Let's look in the Radak. Let's see the Radak. Maybe the Radak will help us out. Or maybe make matters more confusing. Let's see. I know. Of Nei David Kohanim Hayu. So says, probably just underline, Kolomer doesn't mean that there were Kohanim, right? Like the old joke, you can't be a Kohen if your father's not. Gedolim Hayu. It just means that they were Gedolim, they were great. Monim al Kulam, and there were people that were appointed as positions of prominence over others. Now let's see the next line, which is a Gemara in Nedarim. Rabbeinu Zal, the Gemara in Nedarim tells us, quote, Talmidei Chachamim Hayu. It means that David's children were scholarly. So the question is, Belamikorim Kohanim, why would we call someone who's a Talmud Chacham who happens not to be a Kohen, why would he call him a Kohen? Ma Kohen Gadol Notel Chelik Barosh. Because there are connections and similarities between the role of a Kohen and the things that we do for a Kohen and that of a Talmud Chacham. Because when it comes to a Kohen, for example, if let's say a person is eating a meal and you have amongst you a Kohen, so it's an obligation to give that Kohen the honor. So too, if you have a Talmud Chacham in your midst, you also have to give that person an honor. So a Kohen is someone that we look up to. That's the word Kohen. Kohen means we look up to them.
Gahon is as well somebody that you look up to, but it's called Gahon, not Kohen. Is there any other place in the Tanakh, in the Torah, that a Kohen is referred to as a Gahon, is referred to as a Kohen without being a Kohen?
We're going to have to keep learning and find out. We have to keep going through.
When you look up the word Kohen,
it's possible.
You got it. Well, as you have a homework assignment,
find the second place. All right. So, but either way, that's how we conclude this piece, which really is a nice. It's nice to wrap that parak up in this fashion, because up until this point, we've unfortunately experienced a tremendous disconnect between the father and his children. We saw this by Eli. Unfortunately, his children were not, Hophni and Pinchas did not do similar to him. They used to steal or whatever, as we mentioned. Shmuel also, his children, even though they were appointed of some positions of leadership, his two children also, the Pasuk says, they took shochad, they took bribes, whatever that means. It's questionable exactly what that means. But here we see that David's children were Kohanim, which Kohanim, again, doesn't have to mean Kohanim. It means that they were someone who dedicated their lives to the service of God. And therefore, that's the connection between David and the difference between David and all of his predecessors and everyone that we've studied about up until this point.
The only thing about this man who seemed to have a position that he was able to interpret what the Gorin Alfred said.
We don't.
Read about him before this? I don't recall.
Not no. We may see him a little bit later, but certainly not at anything at this point.